Both Mike Leonard and Patrick Dolan were supposed to be on the show this week, and I'm calling them out for this because they had to cancel. And they're going to both come on next week, which is totally fine. In the group chat, I mentioned who I was having on instead, and I said Bob Clifford. And Mike Leonard said, well, that man is actually a legend, so that's going to be a way better show. Bob, I hope you don't mind the compliment from our friend Mike Leonard, well, federal defense attorney.
I'm humbled by those kind words. Thank you so much. Happy Saturday.
Yeah, happy Saturday to you, too. Boy, it's been a busy couple of months in aviation. Of course, we had the collision of the helicopter in D.C. and the plane. Then, of course, this horrific image of the 787 Air India crash. We don't know a ton yet about what happened here, Bob. I mean, there's a lot of guesses out there. What were your reactions when you saw just that harrowing video of some sort of power loss or some sort of issue that brought that plane down in seconds?
It's absolutely horrifying, and obviously no conversation about it can begin without, you know, condolences to all the families and the first responders, and India as a nation, and the UK. I mean, just these are terrible, terrible things. I've been contacted already by lawyers from India and the UK to talk about this in the event that there is a claim that may well be brought here in the U.S. We just do not know that yet. So let's so no speculation about that. But I have on a regular basis, we have consulting experts, including 787 pilots. And it's inexplicable to them, you know, what could have occurred.
Yeah.
And so that's why that aircraft has more digital flight data inputs than any other in the sky. And so certainly when they download the black boxes, it'll tell us a lot. But it certainly was not a bird strike. You know, there was a crash in South Korea in December of a 737 that was a clear bird strike. And you can see it on video where it's like a wall of ducks, literally. And the ingestion of the birds into the engines was well beyond certified level. So you can explain something like that. There's none of that here. And also on this 787, there's a device called a RAT, and it's a device that lowers from the fuselage when there's a power loss within the plane, and this helps generate power. So that tells us there was a complete power loss within the aircraft. So there are a lot of clues that the experts have and that the investigators have. And look, this is a plane that transports, you know, millions of people around the globe. I mean, so they need to get to the bottom of this quickly. But what a terrible loss for all of us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just happened at the worst possible time in flight. And, you know, you don't have the air, you don't have the ground to get back. And it's horrifying. One part of the investigation that I didn't realize differentiated us in the United States and our pilots and our cockpits versus in other countries was I didn't know that some of these planes are equipped with cameras inside the cockpit, and that in the United States, the pilots union are the ones objecting to those cameras being in the cockpits. And I could see reasons why. I know that feels a little big brothery, but to be able to see maybe which buttons or levers or what is happening in the cockpit to help recreate what might have happened to lead to a crash, I feel would be just such useful information.
Well, it would be. And I have to tell you, it's funny you mention that, because I have been an outspoken person against the Airline Pilots Association for years about this very point. You know, you would think that they would be the ally to the traveling public, and the fact is they're not. What motivates their thinking is that they don't want to reveal information that could be used to criticize their pilots. So they're just acting, you know, like a union that wants to be very defensive, as distinguished from having the cameras in there that would give more information to investigators, that would promote a safer circumstance for the public at large. I mean, they're very, in my mind, I've said this in open court, John, they're selfish. They're self-motivated and self-interested, and they ought to be there promoting the safety of the public, and they're not. Because to me, I said at the very beginning of our discussion today, how is it that a plane that big, that sophisticated, could be in a circumstance where a single pilot could potentially hit the wrong buttons or devices, and that causes a crash of this massive and this massive of a disaster. There's something wrong with that. And so these are things that we could learn that they're blocking the public from knowing about and the authorities from knowing about.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like it was the same debate that was had for years and continues in some circles about police body cams. Which in reality has helped a lot of police officers in cases where maybe without the cameras, it would seem like it was a nefarious incident, but the cameras have backed up either police.
You hit the nail on the head. Absolutely. Even in buses, school buses. Think about school buses and the things that go on with them, or trucks, you know, in the trucking industry. Well, why? You know, they've been a powerful enough union. You know, what all these aviation disasters are showing is just how manipulated, for an example, the regulation process is with the FAA. You know, the FAA is coming out of these things looking pretty bad. Okay, if you look at, you mentioned the Washington, D.C. crash. I have the privilege of representing families in that. And when you take a look at over 15,000 near misses, and they've done nothing about it, how are they there protecting the public? And they're not. They've been pawns of the industry for years. They get manipulated by the lobbyists. And none of this is in the best interest of we, the traveling public. It's just not right.
Yeah. Yeah, like there are some incidents that are like failures of imagination, right, where you just don't even anticipate it. And then there's the redundancy of things have gone, quote unquote, wrong so many times, but nothing catastrophic has happened, that it almost leads to complacency. And I feel like more of these crashes are of the latter, the complacency, because, ooh, the near miss, but everything ended up okay.
You know what they call that in the aviation industry? They call that graveyard engineering.
Yep.
That so many these terrible things have to happen before the light bulb goes on and someone does something about it. And so we improve the engineering, but it's motivated by a terrible disaster. And, you know, we talk about what's fair and reasonable to the families at the end of this. All of these lobbyists, all of these companies, they want to talk about what's fair and reasonable to them, because in reality, they value human life differently, and they value it from their perspective. They take chances and risks that of enormous proportion. That when these things visit the families after these crashes, I mean the losses and the trauma experienced by the families is enormous. And yet, some engineer, some bean counter, made a decision. Well, that costs too much money to have a camera in there, or it costs too much. Too many things could be shown about bad conduct of our people if we had these cameras, all that kind of thing. You know, everyone asks from their self-interest. Well, how about we act from the self-interest of the American public and the global traveling public? That's what ought to be the motivation for all these safety, implications.
It's Bob Clifford, cliffordlaw.com for more. Bob, you mentioned the D.C. case. You and I talked right after that about so many jurisdictional questions because of just the location of where it was. You just mentioned that you're representing some of the families. Where is that investigation at? And I mean, are any of these legal cases already filed?
Here's what's happening. That we're still awaiting the final report, of course, from the NTSB. And we are in active discussions with the Department of Justice, as well as the insurers for American Airlines and PSA. And the issues of jurisdiction are on the table because they are complicated. It matters where someone's domicile was, you know, the passengers. It matters where the corporate headquarters are located, or the nerve center of the company. And what I think may well be the outcome is there could be an agreement among all of the families, as well as the government and the insurers, that if we're going to be in litigation, and there will be, because there's a big finger-pointing contest between the government and the airline about who's responsible. And so there might be ultimately an agreement about where these cases should be headquartered, so that would increase the efficiencies, which would benefit the families. And then there's a significant family movement in Congress. The families have outlined some specific legislative goals, and they've been meeting with representatives of senators and House members alike, including Senators Duckworth and Durbin and Cruz and Cantwell. It's a bipartisan effort that's being made to improve aviation safety. And then once again, John, that's that graveyard engineering concept in a similar fashion to not only changing what goes on within the infrastructure of the airplane, but also maybe changing some of the laws.
Yeah. I wanted to just ask, broadly speaking, we are going to talk about this MAX 8 situation with the DOJ, because that one I know is near and dear to what you're doing. But we're going to be in a break in a couple minutes, so I don't want to start that yet. I'm going to start that one after the news, okay. That update. But I wanted to ask you, while we have a minute or two here, how did you start as like the aviation expert at this stuff? Did you enter law knowing that this is a field you wanted to be in, or was there a particular case that started you down this path?
No, what happens and what you'll find is, so, I mean, I have a business background by and large, and I graduated law school in 1976, and what happened was that there was a crash, you may recall, at O'Hare Airport. A DC-10 took off, engine fell off, and everyone died in the plane crashed in Elk Grove Village. Well, if you look at air disasters, families tend to hire lawyers in the city of destination or departure of the crash. And so at that time, I worked at a law firm that was hired by some of the families. And then over the years, if you look at the last 40 years of aviation disasters, there are a lot of those cases had Chicago connections because as a consequence of that, I was hired by a lot of families from the Chicago area. And as the successful results came about, then the reputation develops, and now it's an international practice, so that if an airplane goes down anywhere in the world, we'll get a phone call. Mm-hmm. And because the proof of damages, you know, the losses that the families suffer are going to be the same in a wrongful death case, whether that happens from a car crash or a building blowing up or a plane crashing. The elements of damage are the same. And you hire and you always are obligated to work with expert witnesses on the causation. And so I took to, maybe I could have been an engineer, I don't know, because it comes to me. I have no, but that I was more focused on the business side of things. And when I had attended DePaul University's undergrad and law school in Chicago.
Yeah, I just, you've got to just be such... Because when you talk about, oh, we still have to figure out the jurisdiction, which cases are going where, you know, these plane crashes, as we're going to talk about in a bit, happen in other countries. There's just so much around this. You must have a team that helps you with all this stuff. I'm sure you have a great team behind your back, Bob.
I am surrounded by some super smart people, a whole lot smarter than me, who love what they do, are motivated by the clients that we represent, and they're just inspired to help people who can't help themselves. It's what lawyers are supposed to do. It's good doctors do this. They help people who cannot help themselves, right? That's what you're going to be in that profession, those professions. That's what your mission is.
All right.
And we love the opportunity to do it.
You mentioned you were a local guy. We got a text from Ron from the 847. I just wanted to say hi to Bob. We were on the same Little League All-Star team. You caught, I played second base. So there you go, Bob Clifford.
There you go.
A catcher. I was a catcher, too.
I caught the ball in the mouth, and that ended that.
Yeah. Well, they didn't have those knee savers back in the day like they do now.
No. I actually caught a line drive at that second base. It knocked out my two front teeth, so they made me the catcher the following week, and then I got hit in the head by a bat. How's that for luck?
That sounds about right for Little League. Okay. Bob, hang on the line. We are going to dive deeper into the MAX 8 crashes. We've talked about them before, but now a new filing on behalf of the families who lost loved ones in those two Boeing crashes 6 years ago, essentially asking the Department of Justice, a judge, to reject the DOJ agreement it has with Boeing not to prosecute the aircraft manufacturer. We'll talk to Bob about that after this break. Bob Clifford joins us here on WGN. He's been on a couple times with us, and we always appreciate it. His expertise goes beyond aviation, but that's what we know him for, and a lot of people do. Bob, are you ready to keep on going here, my friend?
Sure. Let's have at it.
All right. Well, this one is a little bit, I don't want to say it's in the weeds. Maybe we can make this as uncomplicated as possible for people to get. I think people may remember you and I have chatted about the MAX 8 crashes back in 2018. The two crashes within about 5 months of each other. And you can correct me on anything I mess up here, Bob, in my little preamble. But essentially, there was set to be a trial, I believe this month, with some of the families against Boeing. And then last month, on the Friday before Memorial Day, I was wondering why this story didn't catch my radar, and it's because it was on the Friday before Memorial Day when the Department of Justice announced that it had reached a deal with Boeing that will allow the aircraft maker to avoid prosecution over the MAX 8 planes. It's called a non-prosecution agreement. Did I get all that right so far, Bob?
You have a good memory. So on October 29 of 2018, a Boeing 737 MAX 8 aircraft crashed in the Java Sea, killing all aboard, 186 people, I believe. And then on March 10 of 2019, the same aircraft, the MAX 8, 737 Boeing MAX 8, crashed in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, 6 minutes after takeoff, killing all aboard, 157 people. And all of those families were part of a prosecution, a criminal prosecution, that the Justice Department filed against the two pilots in Fort Worth, Texas, and a deferred prosecution agreement was entered. And then all of a sudden, there's an election change, and the new administration takes over DOJ. And guess what? This prosecution has gone away, and now we have a new non-prosecution agreement, which the families are severely criticizing as a sweetheart deal that has allowed Boeing to get away with criminal conduct in the views of the families, and they're objecting to it. It's really a terrible situation. This is a David and Goliath story, and guess what? Goliath is winning.
So this was obviously not a civil case. This was a criminal case against
Boeing. Yeah, this is
Boeing.
The criminal case. That's right. This is the criminal case against Boeing. The civil case, in fact, I'm literally, one of the reasons I was able to say yes to you today is that I'm sitting in my house getting ready for a trial on the civil case that begins on July 14th here in Chicago, over in the federal court, the Dirksen Building, 219 South Dearborn. And we start that trial, and it involves a man who lost his wife and his three children under the age of 10. And they wiped out an entire family. And that family, that gentleman, along with many other families, are complaining about what's happened in Texas. They believe that Boeing is getting away with it in cahoots with the Department of Justice. And it's one of those things, John, where you can't explain it. And I've always said, and I say it now, if there's one company in America is maybe too big to fail, it might well be Boeing. They're too important to, aside from all the commercial aviation stuff.
No, the military.
They got the military stuff and the space stuff. And but it's a terrible situation because these families are, I don't want to say, quote unquote, the fix is in, but doggone it, something, it smells to high heaven. The families are objecting.
Can I just ask to explain why Boeing should face criminal charges? I mean, the civil litigation, I think everyone nods along and understands that there was something at fault, especially with the MAX 8. I mean, this is if you want to read more about it, please do, because it's too complicated to explain what they did with the engines and the wings and the angle of attack and all that stuff. But it was a rushed process putting new engines and stuff on, or new, anyways, go read all that stuff. But what did you guys feel was criminal that Boeing did?
Well, you just kind of outlined it. Is that the in other words, you just outlined that, okay, they rushed it. They knew that they had some issues with it, but they pushed it anyway. I mean, the true story is that Boeing is in competition with Airbus.
Yep.
And the 737, they took shortcuts in the certification process to get that plane into service so they could compete in the China market. But they knowingly took chances. And they took shortcuts on the engineering. And then after the first crash, okay, let's call the first crash a quote-unquote accident, okay, in October of 2018. But it was known within days why that plane crashed, okay? And it all required was a software fix, at least that's what they thought, So they didn't tell anybody about it. They lied to the president of the United States at the time, President Trump. They lied to the FAA about it. They got away with keeping the planes in the sky. These are all the allegations. And then guess what? Another plane crashes on March 10th. 157 people needlessly die. And we had a meeting with then Attorney General. I was in a meeting with the Attorney General and many of the families, and I asked Merrick Garland the question. I said, if a police officer in Minnesota can go to jail for mistakenly discharging her weapon as opposed to her taser, what do you say about a company who lies to the President of the United States? And people die as a consequence of the lie. That's what people believe is criminal. And they put up two pilots, initially put up two pilots, our fall guys, for the criminal conduct, and they don't explore the conduct of any of the senior officials who made these decisions. I mean, even right now, there's talk about the NTSB just came out with a warning within the last couple of days that there's an issue with the 737 and potential smoke that could get into the cockpit, into the fuselage, and it's a computer software fix. Well, that's, you know, this is the kind of stuff that if they don't pay attention to it, the lives cost lives. And that's what the families believe is criminal. And they're going to fight it. They're going to fight it all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States. Because this will probably go through in Texas. How about this, John? In this non-prosecution agreement, the government agreed now with Boeing that even if the judge denies their motion for this deal, they're still not going to prosecute Boeing. That's how one-sided and lopsided this agreement is.
Oh, they said that even if a judge disagrees with it, they still held the cards. I mean, the attorney general gets to choose who to prosecute or not. They say even if a judge throws this out as improper or illegal, maybe the DOJ has already teleplayed and said, well, we're still not going to prosecute.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Well, does that mean that if a judge – let me ask then. If a judge throws this out, does this mean that the deal that has been struck, including $445 million for a new fund for crash victims, does that mean that goes away then if the judge throws it out, but then the DOJ doesn't prosecute it?
Probably, but who knows what will happen. Those are some of the unknowns about this.
Yeah, that's a lot of wild stuff.
All I do know is that the judge down there, his name is Reed O'Connor. He's above board. He's powerful. He's smart, and we'll see what he does. We just don't know.
I did notice that the agreement includes nearly $500 million in criminal fine. Although they don't necessarily have to pay that, they can also invest that. Which I don't know what that means. Does that mean military contracts?
Yeah, the devil's in the details, and they don't know what it means. It also awards money to the families. Which, when that occurred during the first process, during the first go around of this, we helped the families process that pro bono, no charges on that at all, and we'll do the same here if that happens. We will see whether or not this deal stands and whether these families. It's been torturous, John. I mean, this has been going on since October of 2018, March of 2019. Think about this, okay? These families have been experiencing constant triggers and reminders of the fact that they lost their loved ones without ever having to say goodbye or having the ability to say goodbye. They got their loved ones back in funeral services 6 months after the fact, where they got small pieces of DNA. I mean, it's just been a horrific experience for all these families, and the saga continues.
Do you worry, though, that if that reality happens where the judge throws out the agreement as null and void and the ends up never happening and DOJ doesn't allow a prosecution, that you guys aren't going to get this compensation to the victims because of fighting the good fight?
No, we're not worried about that at all, because once again, any of the monies that you're talking about right now are part of the criminal proceedings. On the civil side, all of those are individual cases that have been decided and settled, or there will be a trial. As I mentioned, we start this trial on July 14th. The civil cases are separate and distinct from what's going on in the criminal side. So the criminal fine may never be paid, but that has, by the way, the fine goes to the government, doesn't go to these families,
right?
But the civil cases will continue, and families will continue to. We're almost, you know, there's about 20 cases left, by the way, out of the Ethiopian crash, and because all the other cases have been settled and on the eve of trial, but there are still 20 or so remaining, and the court is properly processing those with these individual trial settings.
I'm just trying to see the other side, Bob, or the government side. I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt. I know you won't agree with this, but here we go. This is an important company to our military, to national defense, to a ton of workers in the Pacific Northwest and beyond here in Chicago and elsewhere. That it just is too much, and this would be, if they lose and they're criminally prosecuted, they're labeled a felon, who knows how much money they're going to have to pay or what happens next, then that is so damaging to such an important American company that it is important for the DOJ to protect it.
Well, you know, that's a very it's all about what is fair and reasonable, and that's a matter of perspective. So we're talking about what's the proper perspective for the interests of Boeing. And, you know, John, people can absorb unending amounts of pain, suffering, sorrow, and loss of life, provided one thing prevails, and that is that it's happening to someone else. When you allow a corporation, of any corporation, to value life as almost zero because we're too important to, in their view, to the public, if that's our democracy and how we want to run our country, then so be it. But there are better ways. You know, how about we just make a better product? How about we make people accountable? If you don't make people accountable, it's a formula for allowing them to get sloppy. And when people get sloppy, people die. And so long as you're not the one dying, then, well, I guess that's an okay risk because I'm a big company. I got to be alive. I got to keep these jobs going. All these other things that you just described. But when it hits home, brother, that doesn't ring so true.
Well said. And I think that's where we end this one today, Bob. I really appreciate you giving us some extra time. Good luck with the trial next month. Keep in touch, okay?
Thanks, John. Sure thing. Have a good day.
Bob Clifford does such great work, and you can find out all that they do at cliffordlaw.com. A legend. We had a bunch of people texting in that they either know Bob, have worked with Bob, or have heard of the work of Bob. So great stuff, and we appreciate Bob Clifford for joining us.